About two blocks away, the van driver pulls over, flips open his cell phone, and calls Joe. He tells him that their plan has failed. Joe now tries to phone Mark and Sid, but they don't answer. Instead, he gets an all-circuits-busy recording, thanks to Todd intercepting his call. He then calls Pete and tells him what he knows. Pete tells him to find out what he can, hangs up, and switches on the TV to see if there's any coverage. Joe pulls out his police scanner and slowly begins to get some details. He's sure the police and fire department have been called by now. Someone with a cell phone called 911 and said there was a fire. Then another call. Shots fired. Police and fire department on the way. These he passes on to Pete in a series of quick phone calls. Inside the club, the kid nervously rushes back to the stage area with the loot from the cash registers. Harry, not knowing anything's gone wrong and still not getting the signal to leave from the top floor, stalls and lets off another couple of rounds into the air. Then he improvises. Okay, all you guys, line up one by one. Start emptying the cash in your wallets into the bag. Now, you women, step back to the bar. The crowd complies. The guys line up, watching Harry and Steve apprehensively as they toss their cash into the growing bag. David and Mike return to the balcony, where Jay is also now watching the scene below. David texts to Todd that things are under control up top. Todd at his booth sees the text message, glances up to the balcony where David and Mike are, nods, and silently begins tapping at his keyboard. Suddenly, just as Todd is about to make his move, one of the guys in the line pulls out a small gun of his own and takes a shot, first at Harry, then at Steve, but missing both times. Time, 10:15 p.m. Harry quickly returns the fire. Blood spatters. The kid screams, doubles up, and falls to the floor. Harry lets out a, "Yahoo, man!" and shoots up 20 more rounds into the rafters. David and Mike and Jay duck, although they're nowhere in the line of fire. Crowd lets loose a wave of angry curses. The birds scatter in shock and flee to the safety of the beams and balconies above. One lands on David's shoulder as David cautiously stands up and looks down. Both he and the bird look angry. Steve taunts, "Hey, anyone else want a little action?" They laugh and menaced the crowd with their guns again. The poor bastard who got shot writhes on the floor. The crowd now seethes with hatred. At Todd's command, many waiting unseen devices around the club and in the lighting ray suspended above the floor spring to life. In a fraction of a second, small servo motors quietly move all the mirrors into alignment. All around the club, the lasers and spots from the light show quickly converge on Harry and Steve, guided to their targets by the two unseen computer-controlled infrared tracking beams which have followed them since they bounded onto the stage. As lights switch to green on his console, Todd swiftly types in the password, and each laser energizes to full power. Todd clicks the fire icon, and his computer instantly sends the message to all the waiting devices around the club. As he does, Todd speaks into his wireless mic to David, who's listening above. They're toast. The smoky air above the club erupts in eerie, brilliant, diffuse, multicolored beams as Todd's lasers erupt. In a flash, Harry and Steve's hands blister and sizzle as the shafts of light roast their skin. Todd hits another key and banks of relays in the sound and light assembly suspended above the dance floor shunt with a metallic thud. Suddenly all the Klieg lights blaze brilliantly, delivering thousands of watts of intense white light and a blinding flash to the faces of the two men on stage. Harry and Steve scream, drop their guns, and bring their smoking hands quickly to their foreheads to shade them from the bright lights. The computers automatically command the lasers to follow and continue firing. Blinded and in agony, they lose their balance and fall to the floor, rolling and writhing in the painful burns on their hands. As they fall, Todd cuts the lasers and kills the Klieg lights. The crowd of guys lined up to be stripped of their cash stands stunned for an instant, then rushes the stage. Cheered on by the women from behind, they kick the crap out of the fallen gunman. The pop bottle Molotovs in their pockets clash together and break under the booted assault. A moment later, a stray kick hits Steve's butane lighter in just the right way, so as to produce a spark that ignites his gasoline-soaked parka. The fire quickly spreads to Harry's coat, which is likewise soaked in gasoline. The crowd gasps and lurches back as the fire engulfs the two squirming, burning gunmen who desperately try to pull off their jackets. The crowd screams at the sight of the building pyre and growing odor of toasted flesh. Security guys, caught off guard, take a few moments to regroup, then scramble about to find unused fire extinguishers. They rush to the stage. At last, they blast the flames with foam and clouds of CO2. The fires are quickly extinguished. Steve and Harry are too. Due to the combination of incineration and too much crystal meth, the crowd slowly calms down and mills about. Furious canaries, sternly perched on the balconies and rafters above, chatter angrily. The security guards disarm the remaining exit alarms and holler to the people outside to get in out of the cold. Many return through the exits, out through which they only moments ago fled. Now they rush back in, not wanting to miss the excitement. Anyway, they figure, David always puts them up for the night if there's a real problem. As calm returns, a few brave birds descend to fetch nuts and mingle with the friendly crowd. The wounded guy on the floor is the main concern now. He's quickly attended to by Mary and several other women who are likewise nurses. They cut away his pants. They call for alcohol to clean the entry wound. Todd sends over a fresh bottle of his best 110-proof gin. "Hey, honey, this stuff's $100 a bottle," says Mary to the wounded guy. "Well, don't spill it all. Save some for a little oral administration," he replies. They apply pressure to the wound and the bleeding stops. Some cushions are brought from the side tables of the club and placed under his head. He's conscious and asks for a cigarette and a drink. Both requests are quickly satisfied. Todd staunches the motors on the skylights high above. As they open, a few huddled crows cackle and angrily fly off to another roost. Several of the emergency doors are propped wide open. As fresh air is drawn in and vented aloft, the smoke and stench begin to dissipate. The vapors of Harry and Steve's demise swiftly pass from the building and vanish in the cold, black, windy Nebraskan night. David and Mike watch all this from high above. Mike says, "So Todd had them covered with his tracking beams?" "Yep, all of them. Those two, Mark, Sid, all of them. Here, let me call him and find out exactly what happened. I'll put it on speakerphone." David phones Todd and says, "What happened? Mike and Jay are here and you're on speakerphone. I was getting ready to take out their guns when that idiot kid fired at them. How the hell did he get a gun in here? I think he must have come back in through one of the emergency doors that was open. He didn't come through the main entrance, I know that. Wanted to be a hero or something. Probably ran to his car and got his gun. Any idea how the fire started?" "Not completely. The lasers couldn't have done it. They switched off when the Kleegs came on. Must have been something else. I think it was a lighter in the pocket of the guy on the left. That's where it seemed to start. They had gasoline firebombs in their pockets from the smell of it." Mike leans over and speaks into the phone. "How come you didn't take them out earlier?" "The smoke bombs. Too much residual smoke in the air between the lasers and the stage. It would have scattered the beams. If they hadn't shot that kid, I would have waited even longer. I wasn't sure it would work when I did it. As it was, I really had to crank up the power output to punch through the haze. Sorry about the fire, but that was a fluke." "No, the fire wasn't your fault. It was their show. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it." "Me neither. But you better get some food ready and put a lot of coffee on. No doubt the police will be here in a minute, and I think it's going to be a long night. Everything go okay up there?" "Yep, no problem. Our guests are being driven over to the old garage as we speak." "Good. Catch you later. I guess we better get ready for the police. Let me do the talking. You and Jay get back to your rooms. If anyone asks, you were in bed when you heard the gunshots. It was all over by the time you got out here to take a look. That clear?" "Yep, works for me." "Okay, honey, let's go roll around the sheets and make it look convincing," says Mike. "Can't we just say we were watching TV?" says Jay with a pained expression. David calls Lance on his cell phone to check on their captives. Everything is fine. Time, 10:30 p.m. As David's van drives away, it is unnoticed by the many police and emergency vehicles speeding towards the club. Multiple police cars, fire trucks, and ambulances arrive all at once in a blaze of sirens and flashing lights. The streets around the club are all flashing in red, blue, and yellow emergency strobe lights. Together with the exhaust from many cars and trucks, the street is a multicolored, swirling fog. David greets the police at the door and quickly explains what happens and points to the bodies on stage. Todd leads the paramedics to the wounded kid. The police ask everyone to remain so they can get names and addresses and statements. The murmuring crowd mills about, watching intently over the crime scene. David has the bartender set out pots of hot coffee, sandwiches, and pizza slices. He figures they will be here for quite some time. A police detective brings in a bullhorn and asks everyone to remain in the club. Crowd settles in for a late-night adventure. The emergency paramedics take over from the volunteer nurses. Other paramedics rush to the two on the stage. The guy on the dance floor is conscious and complaining. The two on the stage are lifeless and uncomplaining. The paramedics quickly determine that the guy on the dance floor is not that badly off. The bullet hit a fleshy part of the leg and missed the femoral artery in the groin. He should be back dancing in a couple of weeks. They quickly apply compression to the gunshot wound. A gurney is wheeled in, lowered, and he's shifted onto it and strapped in place. An IV bottle is suspended from a rod and hook assembly that is snapped into place. An oxygen mask is placed over his face and the valve in a small green tank to the side is engaged. The side rails are raised and the entire stretcher is lifted up on its X-frame and locked into place. The wheel brakes unlocked, he's rushed towards the door and the waiting ambulance. He raises his left arm and gives a thumbs-up sign to the crowd, which breaks into applause and cheering. After he's taken from the building, the crowd sounds much more upbeat and turns its attention to the burnt carnage on the stage. There, however, the situation is different. Harry and Steve are seriously dead. The paramedics grimace as they look for signs of life on the pummeled, charred corpses. Finding none, they call over the chief detective and report their findings, or lack thereof. The chief detective calls over an evidence team that photographs the scene seen from every angle and makes the obligatory chalk outlines of the bodies. The two corpses look more like tenderized puppy chow than people. After several minutes of this and a quick look-see by the coroner who's just arrived, the chief detective signals to the paramedics waiting across the room. They return to the stage with two gurneys and two body bags. They unfold the body bags on the floor and shift the corpse onto each, then zip the fronts closed. They heave the lifeless sacks onto the gurneys, strap them in, and haul their barbecued remains off to the morgue for an autopsy.